The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Everyone knows that your protagonist needs to want something. What about everybody else? Including your spear carriers. Let's talk about them. And I should be writing season 18, episode 36.
Well, I should be writing.
Hi, everybody. This is I Should Be Writing, the podcast for wannabe fiction writers, and we meet live on twitch.tv/mightymur, Tuesday, Thursdays, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and then we edit the show and put it up in the podcast feed for later consumption. I got a bit of food poisoning last week and got behind on, and I was already behind on posting, so there's 2 weeks of episodes that will be hitting the podcast feeds and the Patreon feeds starting today. You should have already gotten one. Those will be coming for the rest of the week, pretty much, so I can get caught up. But there's 2 episodes of Ditch Diggers and 4 episodes of I Should Be Writing about to come. My name is Mer Lafferty. I never know whether I say that or not. Even when I'm reading from the interview, when I do a teleprompter type thing for myself, or a script. It's not a teleprompter. My name is Mer. I've been doing this show since 2005 when I hadn't sold anything, and now it's 2022, and we still don't have jetpacks, but I have published several novellas via self-pub and several novels via traditional pub. And I'm working on number 8, and number 7 comes out this October. So when we get started, I usually try to give my word count and be accountable, but I've been very focused on catching up with Patreon and the podcast in the past couple of days. I got the first part of a new short story for Patreon written. It's a very weird story that just kind of is going wherever it wants. I was going to do something amusing with an Amazon type site, and then it went from that pretty quickly to sort of a girl putting on a downplayed mech. It's not really a mech, but it's more than just a breather, to go out and take care of her father's kudzu vineyards. Also, there's invasive sentient vines coming for the farm. I got that written yesterday, but I haven't looked at my book word count. When I did do work on the book yesterday, it went well. I think I've crested a hill or something, and things are going to be faster and easier to write from now on. I still have a lot of editing to do on the front end, and I have to get to my Station Eternity for some last-minute proofs, because a thorough proofreader found some inconsistencies with the dates, and I hate dates. Why I made this woman have carefully logged murders in her past, murders she solved, and mentioned almost all of them. Why I did that, I don't know. Because putting that many dated events in a book that they're only referred to, they're, you know, I just need to make sure if I say there are four murders before she graduates from high school, well, the first four murders have to be before the date she graduated from high school. Things like that. And as careful as I was, I guess I wasn't careful enough, so I gotta go through and check that out. But I do have a writing retreat coming up at the end of the month. I'm really hoping I can buckle down and do the hyperfocus ADHD thing of not eat, get a big migraine, and finish a book. Health. Self-care. So, good news. Shards had some good news early. We're gonna scroll up to get that. I figured out a major problem that's had me stuck on a manuscript for over a month or two. And as soon as I finish figuring out finally getting automatic backups for my files, I get to start rewriting. That's great. That's a good feeling. Breaking that barrier is really good. So, yeah, congratulations. That's definitely something you want to celebrate. Yay button. I wish I could feel this confetti. Anyway. Dog update. She's right after the doctor said we might want to check it for another infection and possibly do some minor surgery on her toe, like the day after her swelling went down. And we gave her the weekend, and the swelling is continuing to go down. She will sometimes get at it, and then the color will go bright red again after she licks it. But then it I think it's just irritated, not infected. So it doesn't look like we're going to have to go back to the vet. She's still in a cone because we can't trust her not to lick. But when she gets time out of the cone, she often lounges around for a little while without investigating the foot. So I think she's feeling better. I think the meds are working. I can't remember a time when she wasn't wearing two e-collars. I know it was in the past sometime. But whatever. Dog's doing better. Yay for progress on pupper's foot. Yes. And I think, I got the first part of the kudzu fiction sent out. There are a couple more people I need to get it to. And I'm catching up with Patreon stuff. Happy about that. Tentative good news here. Kitty seems to be tolerating the cancer drugs well and hasn't been particularly fractious during administration yet. That's good. That's really good. It's so hard. Dogs, or pets, rather, that won't let you medicate them. It's so hard. You know, Rose has given us a lot of problems. But one thing she does is she will let you pretty much do anything unless it hurts a lot. She'll let you investigate her feet. She'll let you put eardrops in her ears. She doesn't like it. And she kind of whirls away the minute you let her go. But she doesn't fight. She doesn't resist. But it's like our other dog. When I made him sick, I gave him too much beef fat because I did not know that can shut down their pancreas. Don't give your dogs beef fat, folks. Anyway, when I made him sick with pancreatitis last year, we had to give him pain meds, but he wouldn't take them because he had no appetite and he felt bad because of the pancreatitis and he wouldn't eat. And I couldn't get a pill into him. It was awful. It made everything with the guilt and upset I had even worse. Good times. And this dog will, like, sneak away and eat food. We've got a little table on our couch. And I'd eaten a piece of cake like a grown-up, you know, left a bunch of frosting behind because suddenly you look at it and you're like, how the hell did I ever want this when I was a kid? And because I'm a slob sometimes, I left it there. And then I came back in the room an hour later and I looked at it. And I looked at my husband. And my husband is not the kind of person to, like, sort of wander around and scrap dog any food he sees. But I just had to ask, like, did you eat the frosting that was there? And he's like, no, I thought you ate it. And then we just both looked at the dog who got up on the couch. He doesn't get on the furniture. He got up on the couch in order to eat the frosting. Dogs, man. Starry Green has mixed news. The outfit I did the rewrite for had some serious demands, and I withdrew. Did I get credit for the two pieces I turned down for same outfit? I don't know. What do you mean credit? I don't know. It sounds like maybe you made the right decision and you dodged a bullet. I'm really glad I learned how to pill a cat before we got these pills because we can't touch them with our bare hands. Oh yeah, cancer meds are really tough. I'm happy to say I don't know firsthand, but I've definitely heard. And a friend whose cat had some radiation treatment, experimental radiation treatment, and she had to carry a yardstick around to keep the cat 3 feet away from her at all times. But anyway, we're getting off topic, folks. Okay. So we talk about protagonists and that they want something. We went through the story engine, which gave us, you know, a person, and then a thing they wanted, and then the thing that stood in their way. It's good to have a reason why they want the thing. One of the most astute things I read in Save the Cat Writes a Novel is the mystery is not called Who Done It, it's called Why Done It. Because the reason for the murder is more interesting than the person who did it. Yeah, it's... I'm sorry, I'm thinking... Last night we started watching The After Party on Apple TV. And if you have Apple TV, I highly recommend it. I don't know if it's worth getting it for one thing, but Apple TV's got some good stuff. Regardless... The After Party is a murder mystery, but it's told in a Rashomon style. And if you don't know, Rashomon is the style of getting the story from everybody's point of view. So this is a 15-year high school reunion, and one of the guys had turned into a big-time celebrity. And so they had the After Party at his house, and the thing starts with him dying, falling off a cliff. And then we go in the house, and you've got the Jennifers, who are both pregnant, and I forget her name, but you've got this Annie Leibovitz-looking woman who is clearly the art school type, black and white, loving, turns away from screens, can't look at screens. Yeah. Always carrying around a martini glass? That's fun. And Tiffany Haddish is the detective. And it is a comedy, but it's not like a slapstick comedy. I guess it's more like the Steve Martin short, Selena Gomez, Murders in the Building, I think it was called. But it was really neat seeing people's... Okay, it started with the art woman. And you could tell, like, everything was ridiculous because everybody was talking at the party like she did, very dramatic and slow, and nobody had a personality beyond her. And so that was overblown. But then when you get to two other people, we've seen two episodes and two other people's stories now, and you know somewhere there's some... exaggeration, but you're never quite sure. Sometimes you're sure. You can tell there's some exaggeration. But, you know, where are they bending the truth a little bit? Yeah, there's one guy who the celebrity guy took the woman he liked into the helicopter to fly back to the after party and left him alone. And he's watching the helicopter go off and it starts to rain on him. And then Tiffany Haddish interrupts. She's like, "It started to rain again?" And he's like, "It felt like it." So it's very funny, but one thing I love about ensemble type shows like that is that you do get so many points of view and different motivations that you may not have thought of in the first place. I had a point talking about the after party. I think I'm just excited about it. It was funny. And our protagonist is a escape room designer. And he finds out that A, the detective is a fan of his, and B, is the kind of person to ask for clues all the time. And he's like, so you were surrounded by clues in the escape room and you couldn't get out of the escape room and you're a detective. Yeah. Anyway, there's an awful lot of poor writing. Has people do things to help move along the plot, and yes, that's what characters are supposed to do, but you need to show them doing what they're doing for their own reasons. This is why I hate certain action movies, because you know, when you've got a group of people and they all rush the hero, and the hero kicks the crap out of 60% of them, and the remaining four jump on in because their story is going to be different. When the Watchmen movie came out, the first one, I haven't seen the more recent dramatization, but when the movie came out a while ago, it was very, very happy about the visceral, like, fights were bone-breaking. So it's not just like that punching on meat sound. There were bones being broken, elbows being broken. It was a very, very brutal scene. And as the limbs were being broken, more people came in to attack. And I'm thinking, you know, at the first broken wrist, I'm grabbing my buddy and running the hell out of there because I have some sense of self-preservation. And sometimes I feel like genre movies are like that, where, you know, how many innocents / spear carriers did Luke and Han and Leia kill? And then suddenly when it came to Darth Vader, it's like, oh, we gotta keep him alive because you don't want to be a killer. And you're like, how many were on the Death Star? And things like that that are just completely focused on the hero, and murders that are important only when the writers think they should be important. Unfortunately, it's pretty common, but I think it's sloppy writing. Also, when someone's dying and their last words are, oh, don't, you know, make sure you, stranger, find this relic that is in my drawer and go and save the king, not find my daughter and tell her I'm sorry. Because I'm pretty sure my last words are going to be me-focused. I think that's a time I'm allowed to be completely and utterly selfish. Does that carry along the story, though? It depends on how you put that person in the story in the first place. There are ways to do it. You can still make somebody have self-preservation or be self-centered, and I mean that in the best way possible, but still, you know, carry the story along. I love stories about spear carriers. They're some of my favorite stories, because you get a different view of the powerful protagonist, and it's not always positive. Babylon 5 season 5 was a hot mess, but there's an episode in the 5th season that's absolutely brilliant that is told from the point of view of two guys who are just cleaners on Babylon 5. And, you know, when things are happening and they're the captain and the commander are all running past them, and it's yeah, it was just really, it's really interesting. You also get a sense of setting when you tell the story of the minor characters, because they're going to care more, you know, the guys who do the waste disposal are going to care more about the infrastructure of Babylon 5 than the heroes do. And if the infrastructure breaks down, the heroes only find out about it when things really get bad. So I think even though what I was just talking about sounds like just injecting chaos into your story, where people run away and have self-preservation in mind, or their dying words have nothing to do with the hero's story and the hero's confused, yes, that would inject chaos. So you've got to figure out how to seamlessly put it in. You know, why is the toady attacking again and again and again when it's not working? Does the evil overlord care that the 10 thugs they hired are now have, you know, all have broken elbows? I believe it was Tracy Hickman. I saw him speak at Dragon Con many years ago, and I think he was talking about contagonists. And it's not a word I'd heard before, and I haven't really heard it since, but the best description of the contagonist I had was Cordelia from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, because Cordelia did not like Buffy. She didn't have any powers. She didn't like Buffy. They were rivals. But, you know, when it comes to world ending and monsters win or help Buffy, well, she's going to begrudgingly help Buffy. But she's not going to like it, and she's not going to do a great job because it helps Buffy. And I really like characters like that, because you can tell they are acting in their own interest, even though they help move the plot along. Although he was much more of a protagonist character, Tyrion Lannister is kind of like that for his family. You know, he is loyal to his wretched, awful, terrible family. He doesn't like them, but he still remains loyal to them, and sometimes he acts counter to their desires because he doesn't like them. So it's stuff like that that makes things interesting. That's why Tyrion is one of the most loved characters, because we get his point of view, which means we already identify with him. But we see him being a likable character who's interesting and intelligent, working with the bad guys, but kind of hating them and feeling stuck. If your minor characters just follow without question, they're not going to be that interesting. If they follow along and question, of course, since I put humor in half the stuff I write, okay, all the stuff I write, I would just have it being hanging a lantern on it, where the spear carrier's asking the commander questions and them going, "Who are you again? Why do you care?" But it's honestly, you know, if your character is asking someone to put something on the line, if we're doing science fiction and fantasy, it's probably a life. If we're doing romance, it can be anywhere from your relationship, your reputation, your job, whatever. And I guess that fits a lot of other genres as well. You know, the spiral of, I forgot what I was talking about, and now all I can think about is how I forgot, and now I gotta get back on track, but all I can think about is how much time has passed? Yeah. Give me a second. You can put a lot of flavor into your story with characters like these. You can put a lot of side humor with them. You know, there's going to be people who believe strongly in the cause of whatever the protagonist is doing. And there's going to be people who are there for a paycheck. Or are there because they have a crush on the protagonist's brother or whatever. Something for their own benefit. Which means if something goes wrong and they don't get that benefit, they can cut out. And little conflicts like this also give your story a lot of flavor. One thing I learned when I wrote for Star Wars was they have a lot. Okay, this is a guess I'm making. It's not just from my experience. But I think if you have a character with lines, then that character has a name and they've thought of a backstory. Because there's the scene in the early part of Solo where Kira and Han are trying to get off the planet. And they're going through the customs door and they're taking contraband with them. And there's a woman there who won't buy their story. And she lets, you know, the authorities come and grab Kira. And so when I wrote that scene for the novel, I thought, oh, I'm going to do something fun. I'm going to tell the story from her point of view, and I'm going to give her, like, motivations and have her be imagining the little hut on a beautiful moon that she's going to buy with the money she saved and all that. And the comments were, yeah, that's not this character. This character's like this. And then, lo and behold, she had a name and she had a small backstory already developed. And, I thought that was pretty amazing, because then you know how people are going to react if you give them that. Is that a lot of extra work? Yeah, but no one ever said this was going to be easy. Kids Are Asleep says, a lot of stories are also about how things happen, not whether they will happen, like romances. Exactly. Yeah, people wonder why you read romances when you know what's going to happen. Yeah, you know what's going to happen, but you don't know how. And especially once the author, you know, one of the tropes of a romance novel is you have to give the main characters a reason not to be together. So when you learn that reason, you got to wonder, okay, so what are people going to do? How are they going to get out of this problem? Premi, what is your thoughts on spear carriers? And whether they need motivations and whether they need personalities beyond, yes, I will run into the fight even though all of my fellow minions have been absolutely killed or broken, had bones broken. But this time when I attack, it'll be the same. It'll be different. I just realized I was pretty much telegraphing my opinion a little bit. But I just think that, and you know, you don't have to come up with a huge backstory. Not a massive one, but, you know, if you've got somebody who's there and, my mind goes to science fiction, of course, and fantasy, but it really does fit any other genre. If you've got the guy at the corner grocery store who talks to the protagonist every morning, what's his story? I think it's easy to give them motivations and fears that pull them into the events of the plot if we need them, but I don't think they need to feel particularly complex or real, yes. There's one really prominent personality characteristic about them, physical or whatever, they're memorable enough. Excellent, thank you. That was Premi, whose book came out a week ago. And, you know, we all have that. A lot of us run down the rabbit holes and I was talking about it like I was struggling with my own character in my book, but when I got a chance to make a one-shot RPG character, I knew everything about her in a very short amount of time. It happened again when I was helping a friend out with a narrative for a game they're working on, and I don't know how much I can say, but it was basically like, do we have this kind of people in, like, do we have elves in this story? And then immediately I was thinking about the person who, that there were elves, but they didn't like the humans and they kept to themselves, except for that one human they kidnapped for this specific purpose. And then I thought up her backstory and it was just like rolling down a hill. And when I can make my own characters and books feel like that, then I know I will have won. Oh no, Preemie says, people are still mad at me about the fate of a character who got about 5 paragraphs of page time in one of my books. Wow. But see, you know, Stephen King and George R. R. Martin do that. There's a memorable, I've mentioned it a couple of times, there's a very memorable chapter in The Stand where he talks about the people who survived the plague only to die because of other reasons. So we get, each person gets a page or two of backstory, their motivations of why they died the way they did. You know, there was the guy who was mourning his 11 children and wife, and he was a jogger and he just jogged until he died. And then there was a woman who was absolutely convinced that the world would degrade into sexual assault and violence, and so she sat on her front porch with a gun. It was a very old gun, and the minute she saw a man, she shot it, and it blew up and killed her. So we get all of these characters, and even though we're told they're going to die, it's not even, it's like, it's still kind of painful. And then, you know, in A Song of Ice and Fire, George Martin first has a prologue, which, you know, they tell us not to do until you're George R. R. Martin. But the prologue is there to kind of hint at one of the main antagonists in the upcoming book by showing us someone dying at their hands. And we get, like, the whole backstory of the new guy to the, what are they called? Blackguard? No. Anyway, the guy's up on the wall, and we get his entire backstory, and then he gets killed by the White Walkers. And then, like, a couple of books later, Melisandre kills somebody, and anyway. Night's Watch, thank you, Christian Writing. But, yeah, it's when you're doing your minor characters, think about them as people and why they need what they need and why they're doing what they're doing. And if it's entirely 100% counter to the plot, you need to rethink things. But if it goes slightly off from the plot, that makes things more interesting. I mean, no, we don't need to see your hero go and personally recruit every single spear carrier and do a personal, heartfelt reasoning with them. But still, if you've got somebody with a personality or a line or two in your story, know a little bit about them. That's how I go down these little rabbit holes and make some characters bigger than I'd initially planned. I needed someone in security for Station Eternity, where when things start to go very wrong and there's death, she's got bigger problems to think about because there's actually problems with the station. And, you know, humans are new to her, and she, you know, she really doesn't care that much. She's like, you know, you're a human, you solve human problems, go off, go do that, I got bigger things. And then she basically has a kind of her own bitter adventure through the book. It's very small, she's a small character, but I realized I liked her and I liked her personality, so I kept writing her. But I'm gonna close off the podcast for here. We're going to continue with BarCon in the chat. If you want to join us, remember, you can join us live Tuesday, Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, twitch.tv/MightyMur, and you can hang out and chat in the chat. We got a great group of people, very friendly, very welcoming, makes me glad to come here. Yeah, but if you are want to learn about my podcasts or my books or the magazine I edit with The Kids Are Asleep, Escape Pod. You can go to Merverse.com or escapepod.org if you're specifically interested in Escape Pod. And yeah, I'm on Twitter, Mighty Mer, Mastodon, Mer herself. I've not posted very much, but again, I got sick last week, so I didn't do much of anything. And I think that's it for the show. I will be back on Thursday. I'm gonna be very excited to welcome Marguerite Kenner to the stream. She's going to be talking to us about IP and copyright. She is an American working in the UK. So she is a lawyer, but she is not your lawyer. So it's, she'll have that lens of being very aware of US copyright law but practicing British law and stuff like that. So, but she is heavily involved with IP and copyright and knows stuff. She knows a lot of stuff, so I'll be very glad to welcome her on next time. So again, that's 3 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. Tomorrow I'm going to be playing a game, I'm not sure what. I do have to visit somebody in the middle of the day. If that goes long, I'll alert the Discord or something. But anyway, thank you for hanging out and for listening. You should be writing. I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at Merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support. Doctor Who. I'm sitting home watching Doctor Who.